This is The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. Every day, millions of us walk without giving it a second thought. But what if something so ordinary turned out to be one of the most powerful and overlooked tools for improving our health, longevity, and quality of life? New research suggests that how we walk, how fast we walk, and even the strength of our feet can reveal far more about our health than many of us realize.
Joining us this morning is Courtney Conley, a chiropractic doctor, along with Melissa McDowell, doctor of physical therapy. They're co-authors of a new book called Walk, Rediscover the Most Natural Way to Boost Your Health and Longevity One Step at a Time. They'll challenge some long-held assumptions, maybe even the famous 10,000-step goal, and explain why walking isn't just exercise. It may be one of the most important vital signs of a healthy life. Courtney and Melissa, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Courtney, let's start with you.
Sure.
In the beginning of the book, you make some really big claims about what walking can do for our health, you know, for our bone density, for evading cancer, Alzheimer's. This is crazy stuff. How did you gather your research?
You know, we've been working with patients now for, close to 25 years. And throughout my career, in order to have patients be compliant and consistent, we always want to give them something that makes sense to them. And walking has always been on my prescription pad. And once I started diving into all of this research, it really just confirmed everything that we've been talking about, that it should be viewed as this physiological necessity, similar to breathing and sleeping. And that's where we wanted to kind of start this conversation of looking as walking. And this is kind of, you know, a controversial, if you will, saying that walking really shouldn't be viewed as exercise, but more of something that is necessary for survival, like breathing and sleeping. And I think that takes on a different tone. I think when some of us think of exercise, we think, well, I don't need to exercise today. It's kind of an optional thing. We don't want people to think of walking like that, because it should be viewed as, I need to get this stimulus to our systems throughout the day, not just for 20 minutes in the morning, because of what it does to every system in the body, the metabolic system, the nervous system, the digestive system, the musculoskeletal system. So it was really fun to research, because we were saying, oh, wow, look at this. We have this easily accessible tool that, frankly, a lot of us aren't taking advantage of.
Right. Well, Melissa, let's bring you in. I feel like we are a car culture in this country. And we all, you know, when we travel and go to other countries, we say, wow, they all walk everywhere. And then we're going to do that. And then when we get home, the first day we go and hop in our car to go to the grocery store, when maybe the grocery store is a mile away, but we don't do it. When you talk with your patients, what do you feel like you're up against? Why do people say they just don't walk?
The excuse list is miles long. And I think one of the ones that is the easiest to crack is time. Time is a wonderful excuse. I'm too busy. I need to drive because then I have to go pick up my child from soccer, or I'm going to have to carry all these heavy loads. And time is really one that takes a bit of self-reflection and honesty to crack. We all have 24 hours in a day, just like Beyonce, right? And with that, it is something where we consider a priority. And in the book, we suggest taking what's called a time inventory, which is a very objective exercise. It's a little bit of homework we put in the book for our readers. And we ask them to evaluate weekdays as well as weekends and actually record how they're spending their time, including that social media doom scroll, including 6 episodes of The Office, including walking the dog and doing the household chores, et cetera. But time tends to be one that often comes back in conversation with the consulting work that Courtney and I do, the patients we see, our loved ones. And so time, I think, is really, for me, one of the highest priorities to help individuals come to the realization they can carve out this type of self-care and they can put it into a space in their day where they can be successful and sustainable over time.
That's wonderful. I have a lot of people, as we all do, I think, in our generation, people in my life who are aging. They're getting into their late 70s, their 80s. And one of the first indicators that, at least personally, I've observed about when aging starts to take that really tough turn is when their gait changes and it becomes this shuffling and you notice that they're a little slower and their balance isn't, they're just not as sprightly maybe as you're accustomed to seeing them. How do you, I'm not sure which one of you is the perfect one to answer this question, but how do we know when our gait is telling us something that we should be paying attention to?
Yeah, I've been obsessed with watching people walk for many years now. I think it's this neurological window. You can tell so much by watching someone move and especially watching someone walk. And you're correct. As we age, the cadence or the speed of how we walk can decline. And there's many reasons for that. You know, one thing to note is we lose power faster than we lose strength as we age. And in order to walk faster, we need to have power at our foot, at our ankle, so that we can propel forward, so we can produce speed.
To clarify, what is the difference between power and strength in the way you're using it here?
So if we were to, in the book, we talk about, you know, strength training versus power training. And both are very important as we age. If we were going to specifically talk about training for power, it's creating speed under loads. So I would be, for example, doing a squat, but I would be producing quickness with it. We want to be able to be reactive. So for example, I step off a curb, I want to be able to be reactive with my body. I want to be able to grab my child. I want to be able to run across the street. Those things are very important. And when we lose that, it really starts to affect our movement longevity. And so when you're watching someone walk and their speed starts to slow down, you have to ask yourself why. It has been touted gait speed is the sixth vital sign, which means it's in the category with the big boys. That, hey, if something is starting to decline here, we better note this as a red flag and do something about it. Slower speeds can be indicative of things or predict things like dementia up to 7, in some studies will say 9 years in advance, which, you know, I think is a hopeful conversation, because then we can say, okay, why is the speed slowing down? Is it a balance issue? Is it a power issue? And now we can do something about it. Now we train for it.
And if you are a person who's noticed in yourself that, I think it's more likely other people notice it, but if you do notice it, or if you're getting this feedback that your gait has changed, your cadence has slowed, what kind of strategies might your medical provider or would you to suggest? What would be the first way to address things?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the easiest ways, and see if you can do this, is to, I'll have my patients download a metronome, like on their phones. And what we're looking for is about 130, 135 steps per minute. So can someone listen to that beat and match that step count?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Songs for people who are workout people, you can choose your BPM. And so that's kind of a fun way to do it.
Yeah, it's cool. We did a couple set lists when we were promoting the book. It was like, these are for, you know, little slower walkers, 120, which still isn't a slow cadence. And then we had a 135 set list, which was fun. It was fun to create. I think that when the patients report back, if I say, I want you to go take a walk for 5 to 10 minutes at 135 steps per minute, they will often come back and be like, man, that was harder than I thought. Why? I want to know the why so that then I can treat it. Did you feel unstable? Was it a cardiovascular issue? Was it a power issue? And then we can, you know, devise our treatment protocol based on that.
I think another element that's important to consider when we look at older adults is most are covered by Medicare coverage. And Medicare coverage gives almost $2,000 a year, use it or lose it, during the calendar year. Physical therapists, occupational therapists are covered under that benefit. And so it is an opportunity to go to a trained rehab provider and get an assessment. And that is something that therapists are very specifically trained to assist with. That can be, as Courtney was mentioning, measuring your gait speed. That can be looking at the different types of deviations. And also, we tend to use video analysis in our clinic, and we will be very, very sneaky about it. If you have a PT or a chiropractor or a personal trainer in your family, you know we're always watching you. And especially if you come into our offices, I will have a patient, I'll say, oh, hop on the treadmill, go ahead and just get warm, just walk a little, whatever you're comfortable with. I make it sound really casual. And I say, I'll be right back. And I pretend like I'm going to disappear into another part of the clinic, and I'll stand behind them with a phone and videotape them. They don't know they're being watched, right? So they're not going to try to have perfect form and look all fantastic and be really concerned about their pace and their biomechanics. They're just going to natively walk. And then I pretend to come back and I say, oh, hey, you know, surprise, I actually just took a video of you. Let's look at this together and tell me what we're seeing. And the shock value is kind of fun, of course, and it really gets some buy-in and builds that therapeutic alliance, but it is a biometric objective baseline measure. It's a way that we can get a snapshot in time of what's happening. And as Courtney said, this is predictive. If we are finding that your spouse is saying, gosh, you know, it feels like you can't keep up with me, what's going on? Or your adult children are saying, mom, I don't like that form. It looks like you're shuffling, what's going on? That's when you really need to loop in a chiropractor like Courtney that specializes, your rehab providers, if you're under an insurance plan. Those are the people who really are the experts that can help unpack this for individuals.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with chiropractor Courtney Conley, along with physical therapist Melissa McDowell. They're talking about their new book they've co-authored called Simply Walk. And it is that simple. Well, maybe it's not quite that simple, but I wanted to ask you, you know, you talk about improving your gait speed, and I love this idea about the metronome and making sure you get in the number of steps. You talk about ambient versus intentional walking. And many of us with our phones, we look at our little health app at the end of the day and, you know, these pedometers to see how many steps we got. So if we are parking in the outer reaches of the shopping center or the grocery store, and we say, I'm going to walk really fast to the front door of the grocery store, is that sort of thing important? Or is it more important to just say, I am going to go out and walk for a half an hour? Melissa, could you speak to that?
They have totally different benefits. So one of my favorite sayings to patients is, don't pick up a hammer when you need a screwdriver and expect the same result. If you are trying to hustle to Target and you've parked in the outer reaches of the shopping center, you're getting a tiny little bite. And that tiny little bite is better than nothing. All those steps count per day. Courtney and I term that a micro walk. So if you're walking for up to 5 minutes, it counts. And that does go into your steps per day bucket. However, if you're looking for the longevity benefits, the mental health benefits, the musculoskeletal benefits, the bigger bucket, we need to talk about intentional walking rather than these little bites, which are more ambient.
Okay, great explanation. I always love to bring up my 87-year-old mom in many of our conversations, don't I, Mary Beth? But she has long, for decades, viewed herself as someone who doesn't have good balance. Courtney, this will be a question for you. And so she looks right down in front of her, thinking that that's going to help her have balance, which, you know, rationally, that doesn't really add up. We need to, you know, look out at the horizon or whatever. So that has really compromised her posture. Then it's this whole chain of event. Because her posture is compromised, she gets slower and she gets slower. Well, we took her on a trip last summer and we said, Mom, guess what? You have to walk. I mean, we're going to museums. You have to walk. And she doesn't like walking. She got one of those, a walker. And she knew she could turn around and sit down if she got tired. Boy, that old gal, she walked miles, miles. Wow. And so I guess my question surrounding this is, how do we make sure that this sort of thing doesn't happen? Can we talk more about balance, posture, and then even why we might, you know, you get sore walking because you don't do it often enough?
It's the conversation of if you don't use it, you're going to lose it. And I think as we age, one of the biggest things that we should be talking to our patients about is confidence, is being confident in how they're moving. And as soon as a patient feels unstable on their feet, that confidence starts to go down pretty rapidly. And walking is balance. When we're walking, when our foot is on the ground, we are in stance phase, single limb support for 40% of that gait cycle. So it is a balance activity. So we want to, again, be as proactive as we can and say to these people, I want you to take your shoes off. Take a look at your feet. What do they look like? Because the widest part of the foot, we're going to go into some foot talk here. The widest part of the foot should be your toes. And there's a reason for that. Because if you look down at your feet and your toes are splayed and they look strong, I'm going to balance better. But as we age, if we don't pay attention to the things that allow us to be balanced and upright, like our feet, we start to lose that confidence. And when we put that foot on the ground, if it doesn't feel stable, we're going to do less of it. And those are the conversations we want to have. We need to be having these conversations well before 87 with our patients, well before, so that we can start to say, hey, I think we need to strengthen our bodies. I think we need to strengthen our feet. I think we need to build confidence with walking.
We live in a town here in Park City where people love their gear. And you guys mentioned in the book about toe spacers and how there can be aids to making sure that our feet are well supported, that our bodies have all the tools they need, they can shift. And, you know, the right shoes, the right things. Do we want to carry weights? What do you recommend as far as the kind of gear that will maximize the benefit that you can get from your walking?
I mean, I'm a foot person, so I'm always looking at what shoes people are wearing and, you know, what their feet are looking like. And from a gear perspective, Melissa and I'm in Colorado and Melissa's in Montana. So we're in the gear country too. And I think the footwear is very important. Very, very important. My daughter and I, she's 15. She hiked her first 14er for my birthday last week. And of course, I was looking at everybody's shoes. Very important. You need to have footwear that respects the anatomy of your foot. So if the toes are the widest part of your foot, then you need to have footwear that is widest at the toe box. And unfortunately, most footwear out there is not. I think we've also gotten into the conversation of the foot needs more arch support and it needs more cushion. Our foot was very well designed to be strong and feel the ground. Now, that takes time if you haven't been using it. But there are companies in footwear companies that are now saying, hey, do we really need, you know, 2 inches of cushion underneath our foot? Because I'll tell you what, walking on the top of that mountain, I want to feel the ground. I want to feel where my foot is so I have better balance, so I have better control. You start to lose sensation when you put too much stuff under your foot. So from a gear perspective for me, it is footwear, wide toe box, the least amount of shoe necessary that you need to complete the task. And, you know, I treat a lot of patients with forefoot pain. So bunions, neuromas, things like that, because their feet have gotten so weak. And that's where the toe spacers come in. I got into this because I was a dancer and I had weak feet. So I wear the toe spacers all day long. So they can be very beneficial to help begin the journey of strengthening your foot.
And Melissa, briefly, we're almost out of time, but are there things structurally that should one see a chiropractor? Should one make sure that structurally things are in place, or can we basically walk it out?
Well, any medical professional is going to answer a question like, it depends when you ask a question like that, because that's going to be very person by person. But my overarching advice is if you have had pain longer than a couple of days and your home remedies are not solving it, it is much easier for a PT or a chiro or an OT or your doctor to solve your problem if it is a short-term problem. We get patients who come in who've had a problem for 6 months, 2 years, since high school. And it's like, you know, you have created all these compensation patterns. Perhaps your anatomy has changed with a bunion or a hammer toe. Your gait mechanics may have changed. I had a patient who was an elite NCAA All-American 400 meter runner. And we were training for a marathon together and he had weird shoulder pain. This guy was super fit, super strong, excellent runner, all these things. I bring him in, I put him on the treadmill. And he looks like he's carrying a lady's handbag. He's got one arm all pinched up and he's running with this arm and this really weird cadence. It's because he ran in circles 400 meters as fast as he could his entire life. Oh. Now we're asking him to go run 26 miles on a flat terrain and he's still in this angled down shoulder thinking about the bank of the track. And so overarchingly, if you're struggling with something, Google's not going to fix it. Chat's not going to fix it. Claude's not going to fix it. Come see a human would be my overarching comment there. But what I'd like to circle back to is you gals asked about walking with weight. And walking with weight is something you must earn the right to do. You wouldn't walk into a gym and squat 400 pounds the first day. You wouldn't do a snatch or a clean or a dynamic lift if you haven't been properly trained. And a very big misconception, and we are starting to see the after effects in rehab right now, is, oh, I'm just going to slap on this vest or I'm going to throw some weight in my backpack and off I go. I'm going to go rucking. I'm going to go weighted walking. You must earn the right to do that. In order to do that, you need to have capacity walking with just your own darn body weight before you add additional load. And so, as Court said, we're both in mountain towns as well. We work with gearheads. We are gearheads. My husband's an Ironman coach. Courtney and I both do that kind of stuff. Like we're your population, but do not load additional weight into your bodies until you have built the capacity. As Courtney said, you're wearing a shoe that respects the anatomy, that does not have all of these extra whistles and bells that are actually making it more difficult for your foot to go through its mechanics, for your posture to be upright. So that's my PSA, is a high dose of caution if you are considering adding weight to a walking routine.
Excellent. Yes or no to walking poles?
I'm a yes.
Yeah, I'm a yes too.
Okay, just curious, because I have some and I haven't really used them very much and they're looking at me like, when are you going to take me out? And I thought I should at least find out if it was recommended. Thank you.
Before we let you go, I want to ask about bone density. And, you know, we, especially as women and aging women, we think about that a lot. And I've always thought that since I, you know, sort of gave up running a little while ago and do it spottily, I guess, now, because of I want to increase bone density. You talk about in the book how walking increases bone density. What is the relative difference between the load with walking versus with running? Courtney?
You know, when you're walking, if you were to look at your foot, for example, you put two, depending upon what part of the foot, you're putting multiple times your body weight through your foot. So some sources will say 1.5 to 3 times your body weight through your foot. Those numbers double and even triple in parts of the foot with a running gait, because it's more loads. So from a bone density perspective, I'm always talking, I have the and conversation. Walking is going to put loads through your bones. It does. Now, is it the sole thing that we should be doing for improving our bone density? No, we need to be strength training. We need to be adding resistive loads. So that's that and conversation, that yes, we have this physiological necessity of walking that is crucial for our bone mass and bone density, and we have to have the conversation of strength training and resistance training.
Great. That's wonderful. Well, the book is called Walk: Rediscover the Most Natural Way to Boost Your Health and Longevity One Step at a Time. I wanted to go back to that Venn diagram that you have in the beginning of the book: breathing, sleeping, walking. So many people that have reviewed your book talk about that book by James Nestor called Breathe, and that they compare this book to that one. Walk does for our population what breathe did for breathing. So wonderful. Thank you both so much, Melissa McDowell, along with Courtney Conley. Well, thank you so much for joining us on The Mountain Life.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.